scale that entire math out, it's essentially they're making gross $300,000+ a day and $113 million a year.
Yes, but I think you are a wealthy person if you're paying to have your dog boarded anywhere at any time. And if you own a dog in the city, you probably have a decent amount of money. So I would say it still like hits a, you know, higher income consumer in general, but
buy more Lamborghinis and just like post about it. Like, it's cool. We like it. I think other people are still down for that.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast. Weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
All right, everyone. Welcome to a different type of the Next Generation Podcast. If you've heard episode number 100, you'll probably know that we're trying to mix things up a little bit here. Notice that like some of the interview formats that we were doing before, while fun and, you know, selfishly cool for us to meet cool people, we're getting just kind of stale and kind of boring. And we wanted to go and mix things up. We'll continue doing all the interview formats, but I told Gio, I said, hey, listen, last week, let's just have a podcast with all the stuff that we normally talk about on a week-to-week basis anyway. So don't text me any good ideas this week. Just save it, because Gio and I usually talk like every single day, three times a day. And so now if you're watching this on YouTube, you can literally see Gio's face right now. It looks like a kid in a candy shop, because he's just like been holding out on all of these ideas for the last 7 days. Like literally
I got a big list going on over here.
Big list. The comparison is like the meme of that guy with like the bulging forehead vein, just like trying not to breathe. Anyway, so what I figured is what we can do might be interesting, might be fun. It's been like the next 40 minutes just jamming on cool stuff that we found this week and what we think about it. So topics that we've got here for today's episode are going through the business model of databases as a service, random artificial intelligence projects that we found cool. And I know that sounds like such a buzzword, but these ones are actually kind of cool. Doggy daycare business
models. And second on that note, like they're cool because I think it's the first time they kind of integrate into like everyday life.
Right.
I think exactly. There's a caveat on why they're super interesting.
Doggy daycare business models, billion-dollar seasonal companies, the learning hack that I've never heard anyone talk about, but in my opinion is incredibly valuable. And we'll wrap up on why most billionaires kind of suck today. So if you find this episode interesting, I'm going to say this again at the end of the episode, let us know on Twitter, text, email, whatever. This is going to be something new that we're going to probably start doing on a more monthly or biweekly basis because they're easier to schedule and I think they're kind of cool. So let me know what you think. But let's kick things off here first. Databases as a service. Gio, I wrote this down, but I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about roughly here.
No, I don't think I do. I don't know. Like maybe you got to give me some more context here.
All right. Basically, I was on a call on Monday and some guy, I'm not going to use names. I'll use the name of the example company that I was told about. It's called Closify. Closify, I think it's called tryclosify.com. Basically, databases as a service is this new subscription reoccurring revenue model where you basically build up a database of individuals, companies, leads, whatever, and then you go and sell those to companies or individuals and kind of be the prosumer or business to business model. It's insanely profitable. Like I know, so basically I heard about it because I heard about this Closify company, and what Closify does from my understanding is they basically go and have vetted closers on the platform. And so how it works is they'll go in and they'll sell a subscription package to a company. I believe they sell it for $5,000 a year, if my numbers are correctly. So $5,000 a year, and it gets you access to vetted commission only based sales reps that are closers. Kind of an insanely strange database play. I think the last time I checked, like the database itself right now only has like 86 sales reps in it. And I think it's like constantly updated, but these guys are constantly looking for jobs. So I found that super interesting personally. And good.
It kind of just seems like, hey, I thought that database as a service would have been like some sort of weird tech backend, but it just sounds like a weird rebranding of like Upwork or like just different sort of pools of talent, or I don't know. Is this more than just a like rebranding outsourced work?
So
like, what's kind of the differentiation there?
So the differentiation is that like whatever is in the database is meant to be incredibly valuable for people. So if you are like trying to go and have like this massive sales empire, sales team or whatever like that, these are now people where you don't have to go and comb LinkedIn for the next like several weeks. You know that theoretically everyone in this database is a super high intent, highly qualified closer that you can go and like just not even have to worry about them being that good. You kind of know that they're vetted. That's, I think, the value prop that these guys provide. But there's a lot of different ways to kind of skin this cat. Like, I think, in my opinion, after reading through some of this stuff, like I know there's another one called Cyber Leads. Have you heard of those guys?
No, I don't think so.
No, so they're basically, I believe that they sell them to marketing. I think they sell it to agencies, actually. Agencies who want to go and work with cybersecurity companies. And if you go to, I think it's called getcyberleads.com, their value prop right here is 1,000 plus handpicked companies that just raised millions that are looking to outsource in your inbox every single month. So the crazy part about this is this dude, all he literally does is goes on, I would imagine, Crunchbase or TechCrunch or like whatever kind of funding websites he can go and find, takes all of these companies. It shows company name, location, funding date, funding amount, likely to outsource. Like they put a tag there of like engineering, hiring, management consulting, design, whatever, and the CEO's contact information. So like all kind of already publicly available things. And then let me go to the pricing page here real quick. If you go to the pricing, it's free is $1,000 a month. You get 10 new leads a week. $200 a month, you get 1,000 new leads a week. And then $2,000 a month, you get the whole archive of 30,000 plus leads.
So I don't know. It definitely just seems like a rebrand of some sort of lead type of service. I know at least like from the investment banking world, I remember a company I worked for paid a ton of money just for like detailed specific company leads on like a business development front of like, okay, these are the companies now we're going to reach out to. And it works. And I think you can charge an insane amount of money because the final product that now they're pitching is like, okay, a 3%, you know, M&A commission, which adds up a lot. And I'm assuming the cybersecurity thing probably has really high sales tickets as well. But I don't know, it just seems like a kind of a rebranding of leads and maybe it'll stick. Well, or maybe it's more of like a tailored type of lead delivery and more detailed type of lead service.
Yeah, I think it's cool because like you're literally just selling access to something, right? So it's like you're doing all of this work to build it up and then you sell access to people. The cyber leads one, I think it's kind of tough because it's like, shit, now every one of these agencies is getting access to the same leads, right? So it's like you might be kind of oversaturating it there a little bit. But I think that the sales one is cool, Closify, because theoretically they get removed from the database the second that they have a job, right? So you know that everyone that's in that database is still actively looking for a job. Somebody told me, I might have the numbers wrong, but somebody told me that they make like $125,000 a month. And it's pretty much all pure profit. I think it's like one kid. I think his name's Alex or something like that is running it down in Miami. So
it's crazy if they only have 83 people on the platform too.
Yeah. Again, I would want to like check that out. Like let me go to tryclosify.com. I'm pretty sure that's the name of the business. So if you look at, I don't know where he found that there were only 83 or 86 people there. And I think that there's a free version as well. But either way, I think that's super cool. I think from a database standpoint, like the other areas that personally I would want to go into is like, okay, you see that it's leads for agencies, businesses like that. You see the talent side of it, right? So you can just do other different, either different industries, right? So not cybersecurity. Instead, maybe you're just doing like marketing SaaS businesses or something like that and selling those to agencies. So a different vertical. You can do a different vertical from the hiring standpoint, from an employment. The one that I found that was pretty interesting that I actually don't think the website's not that good. And I don't think that they charge anything for it. Is layoffs.fyi. Have you heard of them?
I have not. I'm assuming there's probably gonna be a lot of Twitter people on there though.
Yeah. So basically it says in 2022, their data shows 731 startups with layoffs, 96,538 employees laid off, etc. So I don't know if they charge for this, which is insane. They have like they have cool stats. It's like a kind of a cool built website. Check it out. And so like the biggest startups layoffs since COVID-19, Getter, Booking.com, Uber, Better.com, Peloton, Uber, again, that's weird. I guess maybe two rounds of layoffs. But basically the interesting piece on this is like, you see all of the different employees. I bet you could literally do the same exact thing and probably just charge for it with a better strategy of like hit up recruiters. And the second that a layoff happens, you go and get in their inbox with all the people that
like were recruiters like, had like headhunters well, right? Like who's going to pay for that? Someone that's going to make money knowing when someone needs a new job.
100%.
But no.
Cool.
Okay. I think I like the context. I think I could get around to it. It's kind of like formatted
if
leads a bit better, but there's got to be something there. I think
you got to just have a way to scrape LinkedIn and find a way to consistently fill the database. So that's the hardest part for sure. Once you can go and do that, you essentially have this fixed cost of like, I know that I can reliably add, you know, X number of items in this database every single month. Now, how do I go and get somebody to cover my expense?
I think the back end is essentially just scraping data and cleaning it, right? That's the big one. and then presenting to someone in a cleaner fashion.
I was gonna say quick rant on this. I told you, I was like, maybe we shouldn't talk about this in the beginning, because when I hear about artificial intelligence stuff, it like my eyes just like glaze over. I'm like, fuck, another one of these. I do think something I'm realizing with like technology as a whole, you ever have like your parents just refer to something as like that internet thing, and like them saying it just shows their age and shows how not like how little they actually understand it. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Well, I think it's the difference of like not really understanding the reference at all. And then the person talking about it doesn't really get it. And you're just kind of hitting buzzwords.
My point being is that I feel like artificial intelligence has been talked about for like when our parents were first around with like internet becoming an adopted technology, it was like 1996, 1997, 1998, like early 2000s. And to their credit, the internet was probably pretty terrible back then. Like you had like Netscape and like a few other like small browsers and things like that. So like to their point, like it probably wasn't that good, but that was the reputation that they held on so long. And like, we kind of were first really getting into any kind of like internet technology at a point where I'm like, it was pretty well developed. And so like we could jump in and recognize the value and see the value and all that stuff early on. I think we are almost like our parents of the internet for like artificial intelligence. Like we've heard about this thing for like 6 or 7 years, and you're like, is it just conditional if this, then that logic? Like, cause that's kind of what a lot of people were just branding it as. And now with the invention of things like GPT-3 and what is the photo one called again?
STR, or are you saying the back end side?
The back end, is it like DALL-E or something?
There's a couple of them, but I think that's the part that makes it significantly more interesting, is now we're seeing relatable and applicable examples, right? Like either AI was either used as kind of like the buzzword, or just did something in the back end that no one really understood. But I think now we're finally in that area where it's like, all right, we can see how some of these different products can actually apply in either, you know, an interesting or profitable way. There's like the text ones.
Yeah, you see this and you're like, okay, this is not an if this then that conditional logic. You're like, somebody just made a photo of a Renaissance painting with monkeys wearing suits. Like that's something that's completely made up by a computer.
Right.
That's really cool.
And it keeps, and like you break it out in different categories. You have like the visual ones that can visually manipulate an image, which I think is a first for a lot of people. Like, I don't know, I don't really think AI in terms of image making. You got it from the tech side of like, okay, it can respond and kind of interact with text in a different way than anyone would have expected. And like, maybe now you don't have to write stuff because it can auto write a blog for you. But I think the really cool example that we both had on our list was strmr.com, right? And this one's really cool because it allows you, I think you upload, and I clicked on it, you got to upload like 10 different photos of a person from kind of different angles. And then it can just auto-generate that person like a bunch of different scenarios, which is kind of just a wild concept. We're just scrolling through Twitter, like you'll see some examples of it, and it's like super, super interesting in terms of what it can generate.
Yeah, it's like 10 photos of just your face, 5 photos shoulder up, and then 5 full body photos. That's all right. So the craziest part about all of this kind of stuff to me, and I think this started coming up like a year ago, as you see a lot of deep fakes coming up, it's going to be very scary when you realize like, hey, is that photo real, or is that photo a deep fake artificial intelligence developed? Like it's going to get to a point where you're really not going to be able to trust anything you see or read.
There's a couple companies that just got in trouble. It's a really interesting legal gray zone with using deep fakes and commercials and then putting famous people in those commercials. I forgot who it is off the top of my head, but there were a couple companies that pulled in people. And now the debate is like, okay, is it, you know, where do you draw the legality line on like, is this a licensed image of them? Like, can you legally now generate a photo of someone else? How different does it have to be now if you're using it for commercial purposes? I think it's going to.
And then you have like all the defamation lawsuits that come of it.
Right.
So, oh my God. Imagine being like an AI attorney right now. You're probably just like, let's fucking go. Come on. Start generating a couple more photos for us. Like the second that Tom Cruise gets caught in a place where Tom Cruise should not be caught, we're going to be all over that.
Like what happens? You're driving down the highway and you see your photo on a billboard. Okay. Like we knew back in the day, if that happened and you didn't license it out, that's illegal. But what if it was just, a randomly generated one based off of different photos?
Another crazy thought right now, in the entertainment and social space using artificial intelligence, there are going to be probably two things that are going to happen, or really, I guess they're the same. You'll probably have your favorite actresses or actors and some of your favorite content accounts, whether you follow them on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whoever, that are just not real, right? So like the idea of this being like, okay, can you have deep fakes in movies? I don't know if deep fakes fall under the artificial intelligence category. I think that they're a separate thing. But like, can you have a favorite celebrity who is just like not real, but they play a certain character in all of these different movies? That's probably going to be a thing in our lifetime. The other thing that'll probably be a thing in our lifetime much sooner than that is a Twitter account who somebody put in the top thoughts from like Balaji, Naval, and like, you know, 2 to 3 other like really smart, like well-influenced people, and have all of their stuff read from the internet, have them have their tone, have their dialect, have the way that they write, you know, all of that kind of stuff formulated. And then you're gonna have a, you know, mock-up or whatever like that of some person's random face. And then they're just gonna start tweeting. And they're just gonna tweet thoughts for the next, like, you know, 2 years, and they'll get super famous and super viral. And what you're gonna realize is like, they're not a real human. Like, that's not a real
person. The disappointing moment when all the anonymous accounts on Twitter just end up just being AI bots that were trained to pretend to know what they're talking about. Yeah. Like it's, yeah, I would guess, you know, it's probably not happening right now, but if you look at like in the next 5 years with the way everything's progressing, like it'd be kind of crazy and would not be surprised at all if it happens.
So this is where I think the only, God, I hate using all the buzzwords, but it's like the NFT stuff makes a ton of sense from trust on the internet of like, can you trust if this person's real? And the whole Twitter verification stuff that Elon's doing right now, like it makes sense, right? Like it is very helpful to know, is Gio who he says he is online? And if so, great. Like, I know that that's a real person and I'm not just going to go and scammed. Cause like at this point you're doing more and more business deals with people online every single day. And if someone can kind of fake the trust for long enough, like there's plenty of people that I've followed for so long, either through podcasts, YouTube, or Twitter. And if it gets to a point where like, I've never met them in real life and that person hits me up and it's coming from the account that I know to be true. And they're like, do you want to go work on something? We chat for like 3 weeks. And then like, you know, we set up a bank account and they take all the money. Like that's fucked, but it's a real, you know what I mean? Like it's a real thing that will probably start happening. So I think the verification through like NFTs or whatever makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I think to some extent it also kind of matters on how you're pitching it, right? Like it's probably fine to have non-real people on Twitter to some extent, right? Yeah, like if you're actually generating interesting content with what you're saying and repurposing it, like there's probably a niche for that, but it becomes on like the deception side of like, no, this is all just kind of smoke and mirrors. The other really cool example I had was taking the kind of the text version of AI from the GPT-3 model. Someone developed an Excel plugin, which I thought was pretty interesting because it converts the example they had, or one of them was like a bunch of misformatted addresses. And then the result was, okay, pull in a zip code that's, what is it, 4 digits from all of this context. Like, tell me where in the country the zip code is for this. And it reformats all of it. Which like pretty basic example, but for anyone that's gone through and tried to reformat a lot of Excel stuff, if this works to the extent that it could, you know, there's a lot of people that have Excel jobs that are going to have to start looking at.
I was about to say, investment banker analysts are shaking in their boots right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough though when you're like, hey, can you please model this and make the growth rate high enough to make sure the multiple works out.
But like if you make content around Excel or you sell an Excel course, which like you go to Udemy and there's like, I'm pretty sure their top selling courses are all Excel courses. Like Udemy is probably terrified of this. All of the course creators are probably really terrified of this. Yeah, I think that makes just so much sense. Like there should, and even the flip side of that, essentially what you're doing is you're saying, how can I go and get this super technical thing done in layman's terms? How can I say, hey, I don't want to go and do equals if parentheses A2 comma B3, like, you know, like try to like make like an if this then that formula on Excel. I just want to say, show me the zip code and parse that out from the rest of it, right? You want to like speak super simply and not have to know the language for it. The other really cool example of this that I saw 2 years ago and I've never seen it since, but I got to imagine it still exists somewhere, is, hey, build me a website with, you know, a search bar at the top, a navigation bar that has 5 different pages. I want a hero image with 2 buttons and subtitles underneath. And then I want to go and have a carousel image of like 5 images that rotate automatically every 3 seconds. Like saying something like that, and then the website gets built, is really cool because then you can do it with no code at all.
And then you fill it with all auto-generated content. And now you just have half the internet being spam
websites. And then marketers ruin the internet again. There we go.
Who's the Moz guy, the M-O-Z?
Moise Ali?
Yeah, I think.
That guy does a lot of e-commerce
so stuff. He also has a bunch of SEO stuff, I believe, right?
I don't know
what you're talking about. Someone,
Moz.com something.
Yeah, so someone had, they were doing a bunch of tests of like AI-generated websites and content and like how they rank versus all the other ones. And for a while, they built a ton of websites that got a bunch of traffic. But I think over the past couple of weeks, Google has been dropping the rankings of all the AI-generated text ones, which is pretty interesting. So I think the search engines know about it. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made. Like I think they can test if the content is AI generated enough, because I think as a consumer, you want to know that someone put more research into it, maybe to some extent than a computer, right? Which I don't know if that's going to be fair in the future, and if you're actually going to trust a human over it. But I think right now,
I don't want to know that. I don't think that's what consumers want either. I think consumers just want their answers. And so if the AI ones give the answers easier, quicker, better, like,
but is it more
I
don't accurate, care about right? how I think accuracy is always the issue there.
I would guess it is, right? I would theoretically guess that the artificial intelligence, if they were given a big enough data set, could be more accurate than your or my opinion. If we forget something or if we like omit some detail that might be more important, that would be
my thought. If I'm looking up like dog crate reviews or something, I don't know if I want like then, an AI generated one. Like I want someone that ordered all the products, right? That's how Wirecutter got really popular, because they kind of skipped over the we're just going to write reviews without testing products, and now they're like, we're ordering all of this, we're going to test it all out and show you that real thought was put behind
it. Instead you got the guy in Pakistan who's paid 7 cents a word who's writing about the dog crates. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. Speaking of dog crates, You actually had this doggy daycare. What's up with that?
Okay, this one's super cool. Rohan had tweeted this.
Okay, Rohan Johar, I think is his last name.
Yeah, we'll link to the actual Twitter account below. So he had mentioned this a little bit, and I kind of dove into it, and it's super fascinating. So it is a company that does and specializes in doggy daycares, like high end. Leave your dog here, and you can pay us. So the way that they work is it's $500 a month, and you can do unlimited daycare throughout the day. $50 for boarding overnight or $20, and it gets them a bath. But they have 185 locations. They're like super tech enabled, where you can just kind of look at your dog running around all day. I think that's a fascinating one. It's such a niche business model, but in terms of like, we have really high end and wealthy consumers that I think would love animals, and they want a higher end service to, you know, protect their dogs.
Sorry, it's $500 a month?
$500 a month, right.
How much is a normal doggy daycare?
I don't know.
Also, my question too is, okay, so I'm assuming you need a decent amount of real estate, because at least a lawn, right?
Yeah.
Because you need these dogs to like be running around. Nobody wants just to crate up their dog all day. So $500 a month, you need a decent amount. Like how many dogs are they taking care of? Like 100, 50, 25?
No, probably at least 100, I would assume. And people does it turn into a gym model, right? Like what's the average use per person? I'm assuming not everyone's going, right? So you probably have a couple hundred people signed up.
Yeah.
So I don't know what gives you
I would assume if you're paying $500 for your dog to be around there, you're using it.
Right. And if you had a couple hundred people, right? If you even had 200 people signed up for it, you know, that's $100,000 a month.
Okay. But I think that's a huge assumption. 200 dogs a day. That's so many dogs.
I don't think they're using it every day.
I agree on the weekends, or maybe it's the opposite. I know we have friends that would like have their dogs only be watched on the weekends, and then they would take care of the dog during the week. So I can see the difference between Monday through Friday and Saturday through Sunday type of dog care. But I would think that they would be using them a lot. Maybe the exception of that is if you have this hybrid work model where it's like, hey, listen, you have to be in the office 2 days a week. Otherwise you can watch the dog the whole time. So like, I can see your point there. Do they pick the dogs up, or is it like you still have to drive in?
I think so. I think you go and, like, I think it's really popular in cities, but I think you have to go with your dog and drop them off.
I think it's cool. I don't know how many dogs you could take. That would be my only thing. Cause like, okay, if this is like a mom who like loves dogs, you have to go and hire people. Like 200 dogs a day. How many people per dog? Is that like, you know, one employee to 10 dogs, 20 dogs? So you definitely need staff. The other thing here that I would think is tough. So the Planet Fitness model, to your point of like who uses it and who doesn't, Planet Fitness model works really well. I saw this, I think it was a Hormozy video or something like that, where basically you ask yourself the question, who goes to the gym every single day and what do they do, right? The person who goes to the gym every single day loves squat racks, right? They want like big kind of like barbell and like Olympic style stuff. They love to go and have like a ton of options for free weights. They want like a big open kind of like maybe track or open space area where they can do like some additional things like battle ropes and tires and sleds and all that kind of shit, right? He's like, cool. That's who's going to the gym every single day. So I think Planet Fitness turn around and goes, who's not going to the gym every single day? And like, what do they do when they go to the gym, right? That person only uses machines, loves cardio. Like they're going to the gym to walk on the treadmill for 45 minutes. They don't use squat racks or a lot of the free weights or a lot of the dumbbells. And like, they want things to be like very kind of like constrained. So their whole point, and maybe my numbers are a little wrong here, but their whole thing is like, let's have it loaded to the roof with treadmills. Let's have as many machines as humanly possible. And let's not give people like the flexibility of like the Olympic style, CrossFit style, kind of like things that daily gym goers would have. I think the business model of Planet Fitness is essentially they try to have 10,000 people sign up for every single location, and their monthly active member rate of people who show up on a monthly basis is 7%.
Which I think they're a tough example though, because yeah, I think to your point, it's kind of a skeevy business model. I think specifically for Planet Fitness, they also have pizza. They have free pizza once a week. I think the fact that you're combining a gym with free pizza clearly shows you're not on the same page. I think it's an interesting business model. I don't think the doggy daycare falls into that one. I would bet their use is higher because it's also significantly more expensive. I think there's probably a good gym in between, right? There's plenty of gyms that are like, they're not going to yell at you for, I think you can't wear tank tops in the Planet Fitness. It's an absurd concept.
That's in the other gym I've told you about. You can wear tank tops at Planet Fitness.
No, I don't.
I've worn cut off some Planet Fitness before. You definitely.
There's a whole YouTube series on people getting kicked out for wearing, or maybe stringers. Like if you were really small tank tops. But
personally, I'm just going to throw this out there. Love dogs, hate that business model of you definitely need a ton of like a high employee to dog ratio. And it just doesn't seem to scale well.
I don't know. I would say, I think there are business model issues, but just based off of their growth and their scale, I think they did figure something out unless they're just burning money consistently. It does seem pretty interesting because the people behind it too have a ton of franchising experience. I think Neil Gill is one of them. They partnered with some really interesting people.
You don't put the dog in a crate, right?
Well, I think that's the boarding one. If you're boarding, if they're doing overnight.
Sure. That's different, I think. Cause if I paid $500
for the daycare, there's like a video of just a ton of dogs in like a backyard playing. Like, I don't imagine that's a ton of work.
Do you think $500 a month is a lot for that?
No, like I think that's like most people, if you're doing Rover, you're living in a city. I think we both know a lot of people that pay a ton of money to have their dogs, you know, on the weekends and hosted.
Okay. So then I just want to clarify that when you originally pitched it, I thought you said it was a luxury thing. $500 a month actually seems like a pretty like cheap rate for something like this.
Yes. But I think you are a wealthy person if you're paying to have your dog boarded anywhere at any time. And if you own a dog in the city, you probably have a decent amount of money. So I would say it's still like, hits a, you know, higher income consumer in general, but yeah.
Do you remember the name of the one that this one is about or no?
Which one?
Just the company. I think you're referring to a specific company with this.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It is Dogtopia Enterprises.
Dogtopia. And you said they have 180 locations?
185 locations. Yep.
All right. Worth looking it up afterwards.
And I bet each location is probably doing $1 million a year at least. Right. So they're at, I don't know, call it 150 million. And revenue with these. I think it's interesting. We'll skip to the next one.
Yeah, we keep go to the next one because I'm looking up Dogtopia on LinkedIn right now. Dogtopia, consumer service company. Let's see. How many employees do they have? Oh, fuck. Okay. All right.
How many employees
have? How many do you think they have?
I don't know. By the way, you said that an absurd amount of employees. Well,
I don't think it's an absurd amount. I guess if you have that many locations, just more so, they have 738 employees. But I'm curious if it's like, if you got to click around on that kind of stuff, right? Because it might be like, specifically like just somebody that works at one of the retail locations or something like that.
But I think in another kind of interesting comparison there is like, all right, this is the inverse model of going from hotels to Airbnbs. This is kind of the opposite of that. This is going from Rover and, you know, lower end dog boarding houses to, you know, essentially the hotel of, the hotel version of the Airbnbs for the dogs, which I think would be the Rover comparison.
Hold on, I'm reading this out loud right now. So they have 200 doggy daycare centers in North America, 330 franchise agreements signed that are planned to open. So that's insane. Dogtopia, the leading doggy daycare brand, is on track to open 45 centers this year. I don't know when he wrote this. And sign more than 90 new franchise agreements. So that kind of contradicts that last number, it sounds like. We continue to see comparative same-store sales in excess of 30%, which is exceptional for any brand. I don't even know what that means. Do you know what that means?
I think same-store sales, like, increasing. 30% increase, I would guess, every year.
Interesting.
Either way, I think it's a super fascinating business model.
There's more furry friends, is the category technically, of dogs and cats in the U.S. than there are, I believe, kids on, or people on 18 and under.
There's more animals?
Yes, but not, I guess it doesn't count like, you know, like rabbits and things like that. It's specifically dogs and cats.
No, and I think over the past couple of years, people have been spending way more money on it too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it'll be interesting to see if that stays after COVID's gone. But no, huge niche. Figure out a way to make money on people loving their animals.
All right, let's talk Halloween pop-up business models. Because we're past that right now, but I went to Starbucks this morning. They're already selling the Christmas cups, and we're recording this on November 3rd. So what you got?
All right, so the business model behind this is pretty interesting. It starts from the issue with some of these models is that they're so seasonal. But the way it happened, I thought was pretty interesting too. So Spirit Halloween, everyone sees, they take over the huge abandoned buildings. They have the flag in the front, and it's like, okay, you see all the memes of like how long until a spirit pops up. Somewhere, but they signed like 2 to 3 month long leases only in the fall. They made the number's not public, but probably anywhere between $800 to $1.2 billion.
How do you know that number if it's not public?
The reasonable estimates of like everything online.
So you're saying you looked it up and people are like, somebody else is doing the work to find something like this.
The estimates are, you know, I don't know, plus or minus around $1 billion. Okay. And it's funny that the way it started was he had a clothing store in California, and I guess retail sales in October, or there was a women's clothing store, and retail sales in October just generally really low. And he saw that some customer was
probably, because it's pre Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Someone's like, if I want that shirt, I'm just going to wait the 45 days, right?
No, I think this is like the 90s and 80s. I think just in general.
Was the commercialization of Black Friday, Cyber Monday not a thing in the 90s and 80s?
Bro, Cyber Monday.
Well, I understand the Cyber Monday part. What about Black Friday?
I think just sales, retail sales in general are lower in the fall. And he saw that, yeah, people were selling a ton of costumes. So he's like, all right, we're going to start selling costumes. And they end up selling it to Spencer's, which is like the trinket kind of store in the mall. But now they have 1,400 stores, or I think just under 2,000, depending on when you looked at the data. And I mean, it's just an insane model. Like, they spend most of the year just trying to find empty warehouses to host these in, and they make an insane amount of money in a 2 to 3 month time span.
Do you know what the margin is?
I think it's high, other than I think COVID, they talked about losing a decent amount on margin because of shipping and stuff. But no, not off the top of my head.
Like, all right, so two things to consider. One, if you think about it, like, they're selling a $2 item for like $70. So like,
right,
like the overall contribution margin is insane on a product like that. I'm curious if they get screwed from Amazon in the last couple of years, like how it's shifted in the last 5 years or something like that. Just because, like, I mean, this year I bought a cowboy hat online, right, for like $13 and a bandana. So like, I didn't go in, but like when we were in Vegas last year, we all bought $70 to $80 pirate costumes. Like yours, I think you bought the $150 pirate costume. That probably
great cost costume like, though.
Great, oh, great costume. But like the $150 costume, that costs like, you know, $5 to make. The retail play is super interesting, right? Like, and I think you and I follow enough Instagram real estate accounts that like just make fun of the Spirit of Halloween stuff all the time, which is hilarious. Like, you know, Facebook backs out of new headquarters lease.
Office
lease. Don't worry, Spirit of Halloween jumps in with the 80-story sublease. But the other thing that is really interesting too is like, you need a shit ton of temporary workers. Like,
right, that's I think their biggest issue.
That's got to be so hard. Like, I know CJ works at a ski place over in Tahoe, right? Like, all of those, like, all of, is it Epic or Vail Resorts? Is that the holding company?
Vail Resorts.
Like, you need an insane amount of seasonal workers to go and keep that stuff afloat. I would imagine it's 10 times harder when you're like, hey, do you want a job for the next 60 days? And especially a job that's like not low stress. Like this is kind of like people are going to be coming in like crazy. So I think that's really tough.
But I think it shows though that like you can scale the pop-up model, right? Like you probably need really, really high gross margins, like you're saying. But I think it's unique. I would be curious to see if it's scalable to this extent on any other niche. I don't really think it is. I think Halloween's one of the biggest spending. So it's gone up, I think, every year.
Really?
I think currently the current estimate for this year, Halloween spending was $10.1
billion. $10.1 billion?
Just on Halloween. I think the average consumer is going to spend about $100 just on decorations and attire, which is wild.
It's interesting because I feel like the costumes have just such a high margin, but I wonder if the same thing could work for Christmas. Christmas is the obvious one. I think you see like the Christmas tree shop, but that's not even a Christmas store. It's like a year-round home decor store.
Right. But in like the costume too, like, I don't know, you kind of want to go in person. It's a very different shopping experience than doing it online. I think it's also frequently a last minute thing too. Christmas. I don't know. Like, what would you like? You got Christmas trees.
You could probably sell like ugly sweaters, but like that just doesn't like, it's not as big of a thing. Like Halloween's like, I need to have a costume. You can go the entire winter and not have an ugly sweater. Or you probably already have one in your closet.
Tipsy Elves is a cool kind of combination between seasonal businesses. I think they started with ugly sweaters. But now they've pivoted to like, I bought my costume this year from them. So I think they just have like all these different seasonal costume type of things and they're trying to combine it into one. But from a pop-up side, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anyone figures out another scalable model to that extent.
The biggest one that everyone quote unquote has to buy are Christmas trees. And so if you can figure out a solution around that, it's just so much tougher. Cause like for what it's worth, the markups on Christmas trees are absurd, but you have to deal with agriculture, which
You got to grow a bunch of trees.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, hey, listen, we're going to start this franchise. It's going to take 20 years while we wait for all of these trees to grow, but just you fucking wait. We're going to be the spirit of Christmas, baby. All right. You want to jump over to these last two?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This one, I tweeted this the other day. So if people follow me on Twitter, they probably have already heard me talk about this. Everyone talks about learning through books. Everyone talks about learning through podcasts and YouTube and all of that kind of shit. Nobody, and it's something that's been a huge learning source for myself personally, as we've been trying to like hire and build out teams here. Nobody is talking about learning through interviews. And so one thing that Gio and I both realized, and learning through interviews is basically, here's what I mean by that. We are interviewing a ton of people. We just hired an operations manager. But during that entire process, you know, I probably screened 30 to 40 people. Gio did a first round on like over a dozen. And then I did a last round on like, you know, a handful. During those interview processes, you know, pretty quickly in like the first few minutes, like, hey, is this person going to get up to the next round or not? Right. And if the answer is no, it's rude to just be like, okay, hey, listen, this isn't going to work. You know, let's just cut this call now. Like you want the applicant to have like a pretty good experience still, even if you know you're not going to hire them. But I do think that you can use that time rather than going and just being like, so like, what are your strengths? You know, you can say, hey, listen, what was the smartest thing that your company did in terms of managing properties last year? Or like, what was the one marketing strategy that you guys did that like totally changed? Or like, what was one marketing strategy that you guys did that totally flopped that you would never even think to go into again? And you get really good answers when you ask questions like that, that were, even if the candidate's not so good, they know roughly what's happening in the company to go and get good ideas on like growth strategies and, you know, where money was totally wasted.
So to rephrase this, it is, how do you learn from people's former employees?
Oh yeah, totally.
which now that you say it, though, like, I think a good one was like, yeah, I think on these interviews, I was asking, I was like, you know, how'd you go about hiring someone new, or how did you do that in your past role?
Two of my favorite examples that I saw, one was when I was interviewing a virtual assistant and I was trying to figure out what exactly, like what company they worked for before. They worked for a company that would sell Zimbabwe $1 million bills. I forget what the domain was actually called, but it was some drop shipping company that would basically go and buy like $1 million bill in Zimbabwe. I don't know how they were getting it. I don't know how they're importing it, whatever, but it would cost like $5 and they would sell this dollar bill or this $1 million bill that was actually real from Zimbabwe because of like inflation and all of that for like $100, right? Which is a crazy concept.
I know I've seen those before, I think, because they just had crazy inflation, but I wonder now, you know, maybe there's kind of an ethical line to draw, but like, what if you just got, if you just posted like a listing on one of the VA sites, it was like, hey, $10, get on an hour long call with me and just explain to me the business model of all the companies you worked for in the past.
I would absolutely do that. It's so so unethical, it sounds like. But I would totally do it if it's like, hey, listen, did you work at a company where like they grew really quickly and then something happened and they had to lay off a bunch of people? Great, hit me up, because there's probably some truth in terms of how they grew, and they probably just mismanaged the brand and like try to just dig around as much as possible.
In general too, it's super fascinating when you find like the really niche businesses that people make a ton of money from. So let us know if you guys want an entire podcast based about just interviewing people on the companies they worked for in the business model.
What I want to do is I want to go undercover, make like a fake, all right, this is going to sound so unethical, make a fake company on LinkedIn and basically like post job roles where it's like starting salary $300,000 a year plus like $200,000 bonus. So you're getting really, really smart people and you're just like, how'd you do it at the last job? Like, talk me through everything.
Okay, so maybe the slightly more ethical version of that, Connor, is I think you make a posting of like, hey, here's $300. If you were making X amount of money in your past role, hop on a 10-minute call with me. Kind of pitch more the consulting route.
No, I like my idea way better. Because my idea is free too. It doesn't even cost the $300. Anyway, if you have ethics, you're probably going to hate that idea. But if you don't, you know, could be fun.
Let us know which business models you find.
Well, the other thing I had on here too, so not even just an interview, but let's say that you really liked a candidate and it came down to like two or three people, follow where they go afterwards, because they're interviewing and they're applying to other jobs too. So this one candidate that I was going to hire ended up taking a job as marketing manager at this company called Goat Foods. And so if you go to goatfoods.com, G-O-A-T foods, so it definitely stands for greatest of all time, not like actually goat food or anything like that. And it is a conglomerate, and they want to be a conglomerate, I'm guessing, where they just go and buy single name domain names for food types. So right now, the two brands that they own are licorice.com and pretzels.com. And they, on their landing page, they say they have five more brands that are getting launched in the near future. But these are like very well done and stylized, like pretzel and licorice types of like packaging and everything, like good gifting kind of food products, like in that fancy gourmet type of food on the pretzel and licorice side. Like I was going through their whole websites. I was like, fuck, their bundles look good. Their branding is good. Their price points are like pretty high marked up. I feel
like it's one of those cliche models of like, we've definitely talked about it. It's like, is there value in just buying one word domain names and launching it down? But like, I feel like it's tough when that's your only marketing strategy, but it seems like they've probably pulled it off. And I also totally thought you meant that they were going to sell food for goats. I thought that's what this entire line item was going to be about.
Oh, no,
but totally. But like, yeah. Their website seems pretty cool. You know, pretzels.com. Kind of want some pretzels now.
So there's another one. Let me see here. The one that's really interesting is nuts.com. So Goat Foods, Goat Brands doesn't own that. But Nuts.
Did nuts.com have the Super Bowl come? They were somewhere, right? And they blew up recently, I think.
They're really big. I don't know how they blew up, but hold on. There's this really interesting guy on Twitter. I'm going to find the exact post here in a second. Let me find it one sec.
I do remember reading about them in the past year or so. Maybe someone just kind of
here we go
research into it.
Yeah, no. So somebody, a little hack if you want to figure out like exactly how much money somebody's making on some of their e-commerce stores is a lot of the times if you place an order at one point and then you just wait like a month and you place an order again, you know, you'll have different order numbers that are in chronological order. And for what it's worth, brands can, you know, mix and match this stuff. So it's not always accurate. But somebody made a post a while ago where they basically did that exactly that, you know, you times it by 12, you're going to obviously have to go and assume like what their average order value is and all of that. But for the most part, you can get pretty close to accurate on it. And so this guy, hold on, I'm pulling up the exact screenshot right now. This guy goes, August 7th, order number 13541672. I'm not even going to read the next one because it's a mouthful. He goes 15 total days. Is it 15 days apart? 78,000 orders. He assumed like roughly a $60 AOV because that's kind of like where the free shipping threshold is a little bit higher. And usually brands put that free shipping threshold like 10% higher with their AOV is just to try to kick it up a bit more. And so if you scale that entire math out, it's essentially they're making gross $300,000+ a day and $113 million a year. Assume 20% margin, something like that. It's $33 million on nuts.com in profit. So when I see the goat, it's absurd. And so when I see the goatfoods.com and they're like doing licorice and pretzels and they're launching other ones, I think the single word .com food giftable domains, it's a big market. It's a massive market.
Also just so memorable, right? Like if I at any point now was going to order pretzels online, I'm typing in pretzels.com.
Yeah. And I would imagine my, 75-year-old grandmother would do the same. She's like, I'm not going to Google this. Pretzels.com. There's got to be one, right? All right, cool. So that's my thought in terms of, and I found this because specifically the kid took the job there afterwards. And so I was like, oh, that's really cool. What do they do? And you kind of just like follow up on it. So I thought that was interesting. The last thing that I've got here, and then we'll kind of wrap this up. It's not even like an idea. It's just like an observation I had in the last couple of weeks, which makes me a little upset. I personally feel like I got in, I personally feel like I got into like wanting to run my own business a lot, just because you see a lot of like celebrities do it. And you're like back in the day, 10 years ago, you'd see like the Richard Bransons of the world, like partying on these yachts and aircrafts or airplanes and all this stuff. And they're like living it up, popping champagne. You see like the Jay-Z's of the world going to these crazy parties and Mark Cuban's flying around and like buying sports teams. And you're like, damn, being a billionaire is cool. And like, they're doing like, they're just doing like all of this stuff. And I'm like, I want to be a billionaire. And now like billionaires seem pretty lame on the surface. Like you actually look at a lot of these lists and like, there's a huge trend of like anyone in tech doesn't really drink anymore. Doesn't seem like anyone's partying. Like the coolest thing that's happened in the last 5 years is Elon Musk bought Twitter and posts memes. And it's like, don't get me wrong, I love it. I think it's hilarious and I'm here for it. But I don't see anyone doing like anything that remotely resembles any kind of fun like the old school billionaires were doing.
So on that notion, anyone with a ton of money that wants to party somewhere, definitely shoot us an email. But I think it's the same reason you don't see crazy monuments like you would like hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. People aren't building ostentatious things. And I think it comes down to publicity, right? Like, yeah. I think there's a reason at this day and age, I think there's a lot of backlash for people having that much money. And I would guess that everyone's still partying, or to the extent that those people are, like, there's definitely a group of them that are probably living absurd lifestyles and not posting about it anywhere, just fear for backlash, because you could definitely see the headlines of like,
yeah, starving kids in private jet party, but rich billionaire decides to go and throw 500 cases of champagne off of boat, you know, like something stupid like that. I will say, so I do agree with that point. I told you this the other week, and I'm not going to repeat the person's name who told me this. Somebody who was very close to Adam Neumann, the old or CEO of WeWork, and now he's doing Flow or something like that. Whatever his new thing is. I was like, all right, come on. I watched the documentary. So I was like, is he as crazy as they seem? They're like, oh, no. Way crazier. They were like, he was the smartest person in the room by a long shot. And he partied like, you know, a deranged frat boy with a $1 billion budget. I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life. and so I do agree. It probably still definitely happens. I'm just upset that I can't personally witness it right now. And I do think that there's for sure this craving, despite the fact that there's like this whole community out there who's like eat the rich and like anyone who has money should die, like that whole mentality. I do think that there's a huge craving for content from people who like still want to see people with money do a lot of cool stuff. I don't know if there's necessarily a huge benefit in being as public about it. You probably get a lot of backlash and a lot of hate, probably get, you know, if you're a big enough company and big enough billionaire, scrutiny from like, you know, the FTC or any kind of,
I mean, Musk smoked weed once on a video, and they had years of investigations in terms of drug testing and everything because of their contracts.
I know. And like he buys Twitter, tries to go make it more of a town hall free speech, tries to charge people $8 a month, and you have like AOC turn around and be like, you're the devil. So it's like, yeah.
Did you see his reply to that one?
He just showed like AOC's merch website where she sells like $68 eat the rich sweatshirts or something like that. Anyway, that's my rant. I think, I don't know the net worth of people who listen to this podcast, but if you've made it to this point and for some reason are worth $1 billion, buy more Lamborghinis and just like post about it. Like, it's cool. We like it. I think other people are still down for that.
I don't know how to comment on that.
All right. So that's a wrap on the show. This is, for what it's worth, in my opinion, a really fun type of episode to do. It's also way easier to do than any of the other episodes. So if you thought this was dope, genuinely just let us know. If we hear no feedback, we'll probably still do another one because I had fun doing this. But if we hear feedback, we'll do even more.
And if you think you'd be a fun addition to coming up with some interesting ideas, pitch us on hopping on for an episode. Would be fun.
Yeah. And just text him to Gio. His phone number is 401. Anyway, that's a wrap. See ya.
Bye-bye.